The approval of minutes from our August meeting, do we have a motion?
Move for approval, Madam Chairman.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
All right, next up on the agenda is public comment. We have, we have public comments. You have 2 minutes and 30 seconds. Please state your name and address for the record. If there's anyone here for public comment, please come forward. You can take turns. Anybody like to come?
Hi, good afternoon. I'm Trey Sedalek. I'm here to, with Greg from Sphinx.
I'm Greg Minton with the Sphinx Company. We're here to, on behalf of docket number, item number C, here for questions on the Holiday Farms impact assessment. We're not going to present, but here to provide information should the committee need any facts from us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Mike Johnson with Forsberg Engineering. I'm also here to answer any technical questions you may have about the project.
Thank you. All right, do we have any additional public comments?
Hello, committee. My name is Laurie Bixler, 144 3rd Avenue. I have 3 comments today, just for the sake of putting them on the record. Number one, one parcel or property of land should be entitled to only one permit. There are approximately 8 parcel properties that hold 2 permits on 1 legal parcel of land. The reasoning for this is explained in the draft. I feel only one permit should be allowed per parcel, and under that permit, an owner can rent either portion or rooms, but only one at a time only, as long as the owner lives on site, as is required elsewhere in our code. Number two, my suggestion for the permit fee is to charge it at $250 with the owner living on site versus $500 with no owner on site. This would replace the 72-night break, since staff won't monitor the 6% property tax homestead exclusion. At the same time, all parcels with the owner living on site should be excluded from the $400 cap allocation, thus keeping our government out of people's personal homestead. The cap of $400 should be imposed on investment homes only, those with no owner living on site. This helps our residents during inflationary, costly times. And three, a final ordinance suggestion is to look closely at what Atlanta short-term rental ordinance does and to modify it for Mount Pleasant residents. In Atlanta, a homeowner must get a short-term rental permit on their primary residence, and that allows for acquiring only one additional permit on an investment property. This helps the residents financially and blocks investors from taking over housing. It helps keep a cap on the short-term rentals organically. Note that the homeowner is not obligated to rent the primary residence, and in many cases can't if there's an HOA, but they need it simply to get the second permit. This method supports the neighborhoods and the HOAs. I am providing the link, and once more, I ask that you have formed a committee for us to give input to the town and the staff, who does a wonderful job. Thank you.
May I bring this forward? Just bring it to the clerk, please. All right, is there anyone else here for public comment?
Thank you.
Good afternoon. I'm Michelle Whitbeck, 712 Hibbins Grant Boulevard. I want to thank Jane and Michelle for the hours they put into drafting the short-term rental ordinance and for fielding many questions from SDR owners. I'd like to ask that the Planning Committee please review each item in this ordinance carefully before passing it. Review it from the perspective of a short-term rental owner. I'd like to provide a few sections that I ask you to consider making changes to today. First one is where it says required to provide proof of property taxes if paid at 6% for the last 3 years of ownership. I just ask that you simply change it to up to the last 3 years of ownership. Some new STR owners have not been paying at 6% for 3 years yet. So it reads, as it reads, it suggests that they will not qualify for a permit. The next section is in the violation section where it says delinquent in payment to municipality of any tax or fee. My first thought on this one is, shouldn't this be the county's responsibility when it comes to delinquent accommodations tax? I know the town receives its 1%, but we pay the county directly. However, if the regulation remains in the ordinance, I feel it needs clarification. Is it for missing just one payment or several? We all miss a payment here or there and pay late fees. I don't feel this warrants receiving a violation on my permit. And lastly, the administrative revocation section. If advertisement for the STR does not include a permit or business numbers, I could have my permit revoked. Again, is this saying that the town can revoke my permit because I accidentally forgot to add my updated numbers to a listing? I ask that this line be clarified or omitted from the revocation list. Please take the time to read each violation carefully and determine if it is clearly and fairly written. I'm happy to give you my copy of the sections I'm referring to as you discuss the ordinance today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mary Ricozzi. I live at 136 Heritage Circle, short-term rental as well. I'd like to address the increase in permit fees from $250 currently to the $500 that's proposed. We received a breakdown of the expenses and income to run the program. Expenses totaled approximately $125,000 and income about $100,000. So income is only counting permit fees. There's a business license expense in the expense portion of the program for $8,600, but I don't see a corresponding income line item. Also, process server, court staff expenses, but no corresponding income line items on the budget. If we have expenses for these items being counted, we should have income from these items counted as well. That would give a more accurate portrayal and really a balanced budget at the current rate. There is a request in this proposal ordinance change to increase the civil penalty violations to approximately $1,000. This too would help to balance the budget and put the onus on violators rather than on increasing fees to permit holders. Please, let's all work together to make this ordinance one that we feel proud to stand behind. Thank you kindly.
Is there anyone else for public comment? All right, public comment is now closed. We're moving on to item 4 on the agenda, which is annexations 4A.
Good afternoon.
I'll move for approval, Madam Chairman.
We have a motion to approve. Do we have a second?
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Motion carries. On to item number 5. Item 5A, a rezoning request.
Okay, this is a request for a rezoning off of Highway 41. This property, you can see it there in the aerial. There it's adjacent to Sun Chaser, the neighborhood there, which is all community conservation. And here you can see it's all recommended for settlement community land uses. Just a little bit of a background. When we adopted our comp plan in October of 2020, there was the provision in there that said if you're recommended for settlement community, when you automatically annexed in, you should be given the designation community conservation. We weren't able to make that text amendment until May of 2021. This property was annexed in between that time in January, so it came in with the automatic assignment of an R1 zoning. They are requesting to go to CC, which is a down zoning, and it is more appropriate, and what should have been provided in the first place. It's just that we didn't have that provision in place yet. So this is consistent with the comp plan, and again, it's just to rezone from R1 to CC.
I move to approve.
Second.
We have a motion to approve and a second. Any discussion?
Yes, ma'am. Are the properties in the far rear of this going to be part of this development? I know it's for sale right now for redevelopment, but there are properties in the rear that already have a house back there. Is that what we're trying to do with this settlement community? Is this part of a?
No, sir. This is owned by an individual that we're pretty familiar with. Him and his family own it. They want to place a mobile home on the property, first and foremost, which is not permitted in the R1 district. Okay. They also intended to sell, like, Christmas trees and do seasonal things like that. You can't do that in the R1 district. It's only allowed in CC. So this is really just specific to this property. It doesn't have anything to do with any surrounding properties.
Where is access to this property going to be from?
There is existing access. I don't know if you can see it on the aerial. But there's an existing drive off of Highway 41 right now.
Off of 41?
Yes, sir. Yeah. It's not attached to the, it doesn't have connectivity to any of the adjacent parcels. It has direct access.
That was why I asked the question. Because if you look at Sun Chaser, mm-hmm. there's a road that comes in the back of this property. Mm-hmm. And there's housing back there already, but it appears mm-hmm. that that's not included.
That's correct.
Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right. Motion carries. Item number B, short-term rental text amendment.
Okay, so we brought this to you a couple months ago, and really the main thing in the beginning was to fix the cap language to make sure that those folks that are currently operating sort of have this window of opportunity to apply first. Then if there's permits left over, then we would start with our wait list and do it that way. That was our original intent. And that's what we brought to you a couple months ago. Based on committee input and commission input, we took it to the commission this past month to talk about having two types of permits, because we heard different needs throughout the public input process. Some people don't want to do it full time. They only do it a few weekends a year for special occasions like the race, things like that. And other people do it full time to supplement their income. So we're back with you with those original amendments plus breaking it up into two types of permits, part-time and full-time. So I'll start with the main changes right now coming before you. So again, we'd still have a cap, nothing changes, and we don't allot any. So we're not going to say 350 or full and 50 or part. It's just basically when you apply, there's going to be a box. Do you want to do part-time or full-time? You check the box and, you pay that fee. Again, that's another proposed change in this. It was originally proposed to increase to $1,500. Staff proposed $500. So $250 if you want to operate part-time, which is between 15 and 72 days a year. If you want to operate full-time, the permit fee is $500, and you would operate more than 72 days a year. Again, it's basically you check the box, you fill out which one you want to do, you complete your application. If you're a current STR operator, your window of opportunity is to apply between November 15th and December 15th. Once we get through those permits, that section's right here, once we get through those permits and we've processed everything for all the current STR operators, and then if there are any left over, come January 1, so it would give staff a good 2 weeks over the Christmas holiday to look and see if there's any permits remaining. If there are, then we would start with our wait list, which currently has about 120 people waiting for a permit.
Before you go past that.
Yes, sir.
One of the public comments dealt with one parcel. One permit per parcel.
Mm-hmm.
Could you explain what that was all about?
The only thing I can think of is there's different types of permits you can do. You can rent your whole house and not live there. You can rent your, if you have an ADU, you can live in the ADU and rent the house, or you can live in the house and rent the ADU. That's a type of permit. You can live in your house and rent out multiple bedrooms. That would be more of a traditional bed and breakfast. And let me think, those are the three types. What am I missing, Jane?
If they have an ADU.
If they have an ADU,
and
they
want to rent in the house.
Mm-hmm.
In the house while they live in it. They can have
that was a permit. That's it. So you could have a multiple permit on one property in one fashion, and I don't even know that we have that many. If you have a principal structure and an accessory dwelling unit, let's say you live in the house and you rent out a bedroom or two in the house, that's one type of permit, and then if you rent your ADU, but you're still living on site. So that must be what that comment was referring to, and I don't know how many permits we have in that way. So I think that's what that reference was. Does that answer your question, Mr. Chapman?
It answers it, and it answers why it doesn't sound very good.
I don't know that we have any to operate with that. If we do, they're probably
apparently we do. Keep going, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Well, I would say to that, so potentially they could not be there and have two permits on one property?
No, they would live on site. If they're living in the house.
They would have to be present in one building or the other.
So, yeah, so think about if you operate a traditional bed and breakfast, you live in your house and you rent out, you rent out a bedroom in your house, but you also have an ADU, you could rent out that ADU. I think that's what the reference was in the public comment.
Mm-hmm. So I guess the question is, do we want one property to take up two permits? But mm-hmm. Okay.
And that's something right. We can look at moving forward.
Yeah, sure.
So we did clean up we had a couple of recommendations from the Planning Commission. One was that we make all the terminology consistent. When you look at these as often as we do, we start using terms interchangeably. So we defined what an ESTR operator was, and we put that in our definitions, and then we use that term throughout the document, as you can see. Again, one of the changes is that we open up the window for application earlier for current STR operators so that we can take care of them and get them processed and then see if there's any permits left starting January 1st. And then Planning Commission recommended we increase our 5 business days to 10 business days. So if a current STR operator provides their application and it's incomplete, there's missing information. And Jane's very good about going back and forth and communicating with people about what's missing. But we'll give them 10 business days to provide that missing information to us before they get moved out and they get put on the wait list or in the back of the line. So here's our two permit types. The first is, again, the part-time. It's between 15 and 72 days. Those days are not arbitrary. They come straight from the state regulations for how the county looks at it, for how they're taxed. And so those are where those days come from. And we wanted to put a minimum because we know that we have folks out there, probably a good 70 to 80 of our permits have never been used. And somebody's just sitting on it. They're not using it. And we have a wait list of 120 people that would like to do this. And so we felt like it was fair that if you say you're going to operate and you're going to do part-time, you got to at least do 15 days in a year. It's pretty reasonable. So 15 to 72 days. And the way it'll be set up, our software is very sophisticated. So Jane, if somebody says they're part-time, they pay the $250 fee, and she sees that they rent 73 days. She'll contact them and say, you're no longer part-time, you're now full-time. So for the rest of the year, the permit period, they'll be considered full-time, and they'll have to remit the difference of the payment from $250 to $500. That doesn't mean next year when they apply, they can't apply for part-time, but we'll monitor that. If you say you're part-time, and that's what you're paying for. Yes, ma'am.
So if they rent less than 15, then they don't qualify to get a permit at all?
They aren't protected from the cap. If they come in next year and they only rented 10 days and they didn't meet the requirements and they go to the back of the line.
Okay, then they mm-hmm. lose their place in line. That's
right.
I was trying to distinguish what it would mean if you were less than 15.
Yeah.
Then you basically lose your permit.
Yeah, you're not protected from the cap.
Okay.
And then last, you know, we have, I think the program's been in place since January of 21. And we have very few complaints. We've had maybe 5 or 6 complaints from people that actually have a permit and are operating. Most of our complaints are from people who operate illegally. And so two things came out of that. One is that we wanted, the one complaint we do get is parking. We wanted to beef up the parking requirements. It's not in there now, but if you're going to rent your property out on a short-term basis, you need to make sure you can accommodate any vehicles that are to come there and stay. And there is a requirement that you have one additional off-street parking space, but when you don't put it in your ad that, hey, I only have one additional spot, and you have 3 people meeting at your short-term rental, and then you have folks parking on the street, you're blocking the neighbors. And so we felt like this was an important provision to change because this is the one complaint that we do hear at times, is that the parking on the street from the renters. And it interferes with the neighborhoods that live there long-term. That's their home. And so we put that in place, and we wanted to make sure that they, as it's your responsibility as a short-term rental operator to let the folks know that rent from you how many spaces you have, and they have to accommodate that. You can't find another way to get there or ride share. Otherwise, you know, we're going to hear the complaints and we're going to pull your permit. And then last, what came out of, again, commission, as I mentioned, really a lot of our resources are spent on going after folks that don't have a permit and operate illegally. And so the Planning Commission asked that we have our general penalties, which is a different section in our town code. But what the commission asked is that the committee and council look to impose a civil penalty of $1,000 per violation. And I know David talked to them a little bit about that. And I think that's really the way it would be if we wanted to impose a higher fee. It wouldn't necessarily be through general penalties, through the criminal process, because those are set at the state level. But he felt like it could be done on the civil level. And so that recommendation came
from. When this says per violation, is that per day that it is listed, per day that it is rented? Like, what constitutes one violation?
We haven't defined that yet. This just came from the commission. And so we would have to establish those parameters working with legal if it was something that we wanted to move forward with.
And is this a statutory maximum, this $1,000 per violation? Mr. Pagliarini.
Thank you. Good afternoon. State code only permits the town in a criminal setting to penalize no more than $500 and or 30 days in jail. What the Planning Commission had at least discussed was increasing the number. And of course, we cannot go beyond that, the $500 for a criminal penalty, and they asked about civil. Of course, we could implement a civil penalty. Just keep in mind that the enforceability of those is very difficult, meaning $500 in our municipal court, in my opinion, is much stronger than $1,000 on a civil penalty, if that makes sense.
Yes.
And then if the people who are operating illegally choose to ignore the, because if you look at it, the lucrative nature of short-term rentals, if they make $3,000 in a weekend, a $500 penalty is nothing. What further steps for enforceability does the town have at its disposal if someone were to blatantly disregard and just pay the penalties?
Right, and obviously, if it was a recurring issue, remember that state provision as adopted in our code also allows for 30 days in jail. So our judges could very well, if they see that sort of repeat, just pay the fine. That's an extra, I guess, incentive to not do that.
And then for the civil penalty, is a lien on the property?
That's the question, and that's what we've looked at in a number of scenarios. We very well could try to implement that, and we have tried that in other circumstances. What I mean by tried is codified it to the point where we could put a lien on the property. That is questionable, but we could do it. I think in many cases, the expense of that, of course, we could follow that up with payment of the 1,000 plus costs plus fees plus all of that and put a lien on the property. That is fairly extensive, but it is possible.
Okay, thank you so much.
And two more things, just to address some of the public comments. We did remove the provision that talked about proof of property taxes if paid up to 6%. That has been removed. And then the revocation of the license, we haven't revoked anybody's license yet. Jane is very good at communicating with folks. We understand people are still learning this. We provide warning to people. If there is an issue, she reaches out, talks to them. So this isn't something where we would just revoke somebody's permit based on something they've not received any warning for. So I just wanted to clarify that, but the property tax provision was removed from the draft text.
And this is just another enforceability question. Is there an avenue through the platforms that list these short-term rentals for Jane to reach out to them and say, here's a list of ones operating illegally in our town, please deplatform them? Is that an option, or is that not? Do they absolve themselves as a platform?
Yeah, no, all the platform does, I mean, the platform does a lot of things, but what it does tell her is, and I know we heard about a loophole where people can list it on a Friday and you know, pull it, but the software takes a snapshot. And so even if they pull it, they list it on a Friday morning, trying to rent it out on Friday night, and then pull it so that in hopes that we won't see it on Monday, we still see that. Jane sees that. So the software is very good, and they have folks that work for them that pinpoint geographically right where those locations are. So even if they pulled it, they listed it on midnight at Friday night, we'll have a snapshot of that. She sees it Monday, and she can usually pinpoint right where it is, and so we can still go after them for enforcement. So the software is pretty sophisticated with what we can do and what we can see folks are doing. But staff feels really good about this ordinance moving forward. We feel like it's fair. We have been in talks with the short-term rental community. We're always open to hearing them and listening to their input. We feel like the $500 for the full time is reasonable. The average daily rental rate right now is $265 a night for the town of Mount Pleasant. And we understand folks are doing this, you know, to supplement income and it's their livelihood. But we feel like the $500 is reasonable for the full time.
And would this $500 raise additional funds to provide support so that it's not fully on one employee of the town to kind of manage this entire thing? Would that enable the hiring of an additional, like, code enforcement or something like that? Would this increase fund that?
Those are things we'd have to look at. Again, if you think about it, if we have a 400 cap, say only 20 of them are full-time. I don't think that's going to happen, but 20 of them could be full-time. That's 20 paying 500. The rest are still paying 250. Mm-hmm. So I think we'll just have to see moving forward how it works and what those numbers look like.
All right. Okay, do we have any comments from the committee? Mr. Chapman?
I have one comment. One of the public comments I'd like to implement, and that dealt with one permit per parcel, mm-hmm. Instead of the ability to have two permits mm-hmm. on one parcel. I don't agree with that. Mm-hmm. I think I would like to see that. I don't know if that's something that needs a motion or not, mm-hmm. but I don't know how the rest of the committee members feel.
Okay. Ms. Hyatt?
Yeah. I can agree with that. I mean, in some ways, that would open up permits for other properties rather than one person taking up two, but that would be the repercussion. You know, if you're using two on one place, they're still going to use those two properties probably with one permit.
And yeah, then but they've got to have all of the restrictions mm-hmm. and all on everything they got.
Right. So it would just open more properties for having permits.
Yeah, exactly.
Either way.
Yeah, I could get behind that as well. Also, talking about public comments, what do you guys think about that establishing the commission to look over short-term rentals now? It's interesting. We talk about this. What do you think? Every other planning meeting?
Well, I think we spent several years putting together the short-term rental ordinance and implemented it. And this has sort of been a year since we implemented it. And this is kind of just we had some issues with the ordinance that came forth where the cap was being exceeded based on the procedures with which these were being implemented, which is why this committee asked Planning Commission to take a closer look. And this is what they came back to us with. So I don't think that we need a public commission at this point in time. I think just adjusting, tweaking the ordinance to work more effectively as we move forward. And I'm hoping that once we've done that, that we don't really have to look at it again. Ms. Hyatt?
I would agree. I mean, if that might have been a good idea in the beginning, or if we come to a point where we just think this is completely not working at all, you know, if we were starting from square one, but I think we've gone so far that We're just making a few adjustments at this point.
Every month? Monthly? Monthly adjustments? All right.
All right. Is there any further comment? I think at this point in time, are we looking for a recommendation to full council at this point in time? Do we have a recommendation to move forward to full council with the addition that you discussed?
I'll move to send it to council with the addition of one permit per parcel of land.
I would second that, but I do have a question. Is this going to include this $1,000 per violation civil penalty? Or that, we'll look at that later. That was just suggested.
I think it probably needs to move forward. Yeah, David?
We would prefer a recommendation on that issue.
Yeah, I think we should move forward with that as well. Because I think
including that,
because I think the deterrence, we need to have a strong deterrent against people illegally operating short-term rentals in the community. That is something that I've heard from several individuals in the STR community, is that here they are following all the rules, paying the fees, paying the taxes, and then there are people who are violating it. And so I think that whatever sort of teeth we can place into our ordinance to deter that and to encourage people to get on the wait list and to try to operate an STR legally is the way to go. All right, do we have any further discussion on this? All right, all those in favor of recommending approval to full council?
Aye.
Aye.
All right, motion carries. Item number C, Holiday Farms Impact Assessment.
Okay, we're starting to see a few more of these. So get ready, there are going to be a few more coming over the next couple of months. But before you now is an impact assessment and a conceptual plan only. The zoning's in place. It's for the properties located between Home Depot and Christ Church Episcopal. It's about 8.5 acres total. And you can see it here on the aerial. So currently it's the vacant structure for Sawgrass Technologies, and then formerly Richards was on the front corner site. That has since went away, and the Sawgrass Technologies has been relocated to off of Long Point Road. Here you can see the current zoning. Home Depot's on the corner. It's orange. It's AB. Both of these properties are zoned AB2. Sawgrass came into the town of Mount Pleasant, so that's the larger parcel with the star. It was annexed into the town in 2011 and subsequently zoned AB2, and then the Richards property was annexed in 2019 and zoned AB2 also. Here's the comp plan. So the community scale commercial is the recommended land use, and that does support the AB2, and it supports the proposed uses there. Just to back up a minute and talk again about impact assessments and what the committee and council's role is, because we are going to be seeing more of these, particularly as we see these areas of redevelopment coming forward. So if it's a non-residential development, your minimum threshold for an impact assessment is 40,000 square feet, and that's an and, not an or. So 40,000 square feet and projected to generate more than 75 peak hour vehicle trips. And this just kind of gives you an overview. I know we've talked in several other committees about the process and all the I's and all the different touches on projects and how long it takes. But we've really got a good process down. And this kind of gives you an idea of where committee and council is at in this process. And so it's already staff and various departments have looked at this already over the last 2 or 3 months. So before it even gets to the commission, it gets a feasibility meeting, it gets preliminary staff review, then it made its way to Planning Commission where it received review and got a recommendation to you all for approval with some conditions. And then once you all make a recommendation, an impact assessment goes to council. It's not an ordinance, but it's a voice vote. So it goes one time, town council approves it, and then we kind of start all over, and we start with all the technical review to make sure everything that was approved by this body is implemented as it goes through the process. So this is just to kind of show you where you're at, and then once it does get approved, it still goes through all of that technical review plus DRB. So again, proposed before you is the existing lot. It's two lots. What they'll do is adjust the lot line and create a front parcel that's approximately 3.2 acres. They will demolish the Sawgrass office building. And then on the front, fronting 17, will be the Sphinx gas station, a car wash. And it'll be approximately 6,200 square feet for the C-store, 16 fuel stations, and then the car wash. And then the back 5+ acres is going to be retail. So if you think about Point at Primus Tract, that's going to be adjacent to the residential subdivision. And you can see here they're proposing a large retail space and then two smaller retail spaces. Just a couple of notes real quick, and then I'll get into what their recommendations were. They will be required, and we have James Aton here with our transportation department that can be available to talk about that side of it, and we also have our town engineer, Kevin Mitchell, here, and he can talk about the stormwater side of it. But when you think about impact assessment, those are the main things we look at. We look at traffic, stormwater drainage, we look at buffers and those sorts of things. And so here was the original conceptual plan that was proposed. They are required to have a 50-foot buffer along Highway 17. That's the requirement. They are meeting it. There's currently two access points off of Highway 17. Proposed is to eliminate those and install one access point sort of in the northwest corner where you can see it with the red arrow there. And they are required by SCDOT to install a deceleration lane. So three things we kind of looked at were the LID environmental stuff, the vehicular connectivity, and then the terms of a conditional use. Because in AB2, all these uses are permitted, but a gas station is a conditional use in AB2, subject to very specific conditions, and we'll talk about those in a minute. So the first thing is the buffering. And we felt like with everything going on with the environmental guidelines and the things that are, this would be a good time. We don't get impact assessments very often, but it is a good time to look at, are there things we can do that are reasonable that can be conditioned along with the impact assessment? So this was one of them. So what we recommended was there's a property line, and I'll get up and kind of point. I think that, is the annotator on? So proposed is to have a property line go through here. That's a really horrible line, but the line would go through here, and you'd have the gas station C-store there, and you'd have the retail here. Here's Home Depot, here's Christchurch, and back here is Points at Primus. So with the property line and the two uses, you're required to have, of course, the 50-foot buffer here. We'll have a 10-foot buffer here adjacent to Home Depot. We'll have a 10-foot buffer here, which I'll get into a little bit more. Oh, okay. Y'all don't see my arrows?
I see arrows.
Oh, okay, good. So the public can't see them. Okay. As long as y'all can see them. Okay. So along this property line, you're required to have a 10-foot buffer here and a 10-foot buffer here. So what staff recommended... I'm sorry? I'm sorry. Okay. So along this property line,
which one is this property line?
So this is a proposed property line between the gas station and the retail shop, okay? This is a property line right here. You're required to have a 10-foot buffer on each side, which totals a 25-foot buffer that's going through here. What staff recommended, and the developer has revised their plans to show, is that in addition to that buffer, they will install a bioswale in that area. And a bioswale is basically a vegetated buffer. So they're going to be required to do all of the plantings that would be required in that anyway for that buffer yard zoning ordinance requirement. But they're going to install a bioswale along that area. So that was the first one. And you can kind of see there what that's going to look like. And again, that would be a separation between the retail and the C-store. So next I want to talk about vehicular connectivity. If you'll recall, many of you, well, several of you were involved when Home Depot came through, and because of you all and the Planning Commission, they were required to provide this stub out to this property. Yes, thank you, Mr. Chapman. So here we are, and it's paying off, and they are now going to connect to Home Depot, which would be great for connectivity. And further, staff has been communicating with Christ Church Episcopal, and they're going through some changes there, but in September, the diocese is taking over, and they have reached out to us, and they also want to provide connectivity across their property. So what the developer has agreed to is to provide a stub out right around in here somewhere, and we'll get to that when this goes through technical review. I know the church, there's a playground over here and stuff, so we'll have to figure out the best placement for that, but that is a connection that is going to be important.
Are you saying the church is specifically asking mm-hmm. for that access?
Yeah, they are asking. So if you can see here, we have Old Georgetown Road. And then what they would like to do is see about connecting across this property, Home Depot, and then would come out to 6 Mile. Yes, sir.
That makes sense.
Yeah. And this is going to be really important, too, is the Long Point Road extension and Von Egg Key come online. So we've got this connectivity coming, which is was a condition of approval, and the developer has revised their plans to show that. And let me see. There we go. And then the last thing addressed is the conditions. So the gas station is a conditional use in the AB2, and it's really very specific, and it talks about buffering. And the zoning administrator reviews it. They've met the conditional requirements, and a conditional use is a staff-level review. But what can be done is through the impact assessment, the commission and the committee and council can look at should there be additional conditions attached to that. And so right now, between the gas station C-store and then the Christ Church Cemetery, they're required to have a 10-foot Type B buffer. Staff recommended and commission further recommended that they also install an 8-foot wood stockade fence with masonry piers. And then the commission suggested that it actually be flipped. So the commission would like to see the fence, the 8-foot fence facing the C-store and the gas station, and then the buffering facing the cemetery. And the developer did agree to that as well. So it's coming to you with a recommendation for approval with these specific conditions. And that is all I have. I know that was a lot. They've met... they did a parking study, which staff has reviewed. They are providing 33 spaces over what's required. Those will be required to be pervious material, which is the current zoning code requirement anyway. And we have our transportation engineer here to answer any questions about that. And I'm happy to answer any questions you may have as well.
Madam Chair, mm-hmm. Could you go back, please, mm-hmm. to the that? Go back one more. Well, and another picture.
There
you go.
Okay.
What about the buffer for the Primus property?
Mm-hmm.
There is a, looks like a water feature for that property.
There is. And
What about the buffer for that property?
Mm-hmm. They're required to have a 25-foot buffer. Even though that's HOA property, we still consider it residential. And so they're required to have the same 25-foot buffer that Home Depot has.
Well, my suggestion is that we have a similar type buffer as we're doing for the church with the wall and the plantings on the Primus property side.
Okay.
Because I'm really surprised we don't have anybody in here from the Primus property today. And you may have had them at the Planning Commission, but I think it would be proper to do the same that we've done for the church on that side.
Okay.
I have a question. Is that what Home Depot has done with their back into their property? They have the 25 foot buffer and they have a wall as well?
I think they have a wall. Okay. I think it's required for the type E buffer. I think part of it too was the fact that we already have Home Depot there and we're not having the gas station back up to Primus. It's the retail center that's going to back up. So perhaps that transitioned it a little bit, but they are required to do the same buffer that Home Depot did, which is the most extensive one we have. Type B, it's 25 foot.
And I have this is just a random question. And maintenance of the buffer is incumbent upon the property owner.
Mm-hmm.
And so, okay, I just, with the fence kind of like blocking the, I was just wondering about maintenance of the buffer because it'll be, but I guess that's something they'll have to deal with. Okay. Do we have a motion?
I would move for approval with my suggested changes.
All right. We have a motion. Do we have a second?
A second.
All right. We are in discussion. Is there any further discussion of this property? I think this is a great, beginnings of redevelopment of the community. It's zoned AB2. This is what we want to happen in our community is have new developments and bringing new retail to the community. And I think it'll be great. All right.
They mentioned they were going to have 33 extras parking spaces.
They
is
are
that many.
Yeah. 33 over. And our code currently requires, your minimum parking requirements, the minimum parking spots have to be paved. Anything beyond that is required to be pervious. And they're, I think right now they're at 33 and they will be pervious.
Oh, they will be. That was going to be my question with our new LID plans. Okay.
All right. We have a motion and a second. If there's no further discussion, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. Item number 6, discussion and recommendation regarding the town's current residential density in commercial districts.
Okay, so I know y'all have seen this before, and then I think it was Mr. Rambo asked that it be taken to the commission for discussion. And so we took it to the commission in July, and they had some suggestions, and then they wanted it to come back to them with staff looking into some other things. So I'm going to provide you an overview of what they looked at and where we kind of landed. So again, this is about the density in commercial districts only. Here's what we have. We have duplex, multifamily, and single family dwellings. They're all conditional in all of our commercial districts, subject to 3 conditions. You can't have any dwelling unit on the street level. All dwelling units have to have direct access to the street, and that density shall not exceed 12 units an acre. Just as a reminder, this is, and to kind of compare, these are the densities of our residential districts. Back in 21, we amended the zoning ordinance to make sure that our residential densities were consistent with our comprehensive plan. And so this is already in the code and in place. So if you get back to the comprehensive plan, there's a section in there that talks about defining the hubs and the redevelopment centers. Which are really the intent is to look at providing community spaces, looking at economic development, employment opportunities, and then workforce and senior housing. And then if you look at the residential uses in the community and redevelopment centers, a comp plan requires, it says that 20% of the square footage can account for that. And then 30% of that should be workforce housing. And then if the redevelopment centers, it talks about only one developable unit per acre. And that's only to be through a plan development impact assessment that is approved by town council. Just as a recap, our community hubs, we have 8 of them. And they're the little pinwheel there, and I've got black arrows pointing to them. So there's 8 of them, and then we have 2 redevelopment centers. One is right here in our area, and the other one is up by 526.
Please read.
So, yes, ma'am.
In the I understand our comprehensive plan is the guideline that we're supposed to implement, but maybe this is a question for Mr. Paglini. I believe that the state law prevents inclusionary zoning, so I believe we are not permitted to require 30% of. We're not permitted to require by ordinance that 30% of any new development be workforce housing. Is that correct?
That is our position.
And so I think we have to be creative in how we approach implementation of this component of the comprehensive plan. And I think offering, I think reducing the total number of residential units per acre, but then giving it back if they were to do workforce mm-hmm. housing is probably the best way to implement that. That's mm-hmm. my thought. So sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no, that's great. And that's kind of what we're getting to in just a minute. And that's basically what came out of the commission. So I did provide them some examples, kind of visualizing density of developments we have now. Riviera at Seaside, that's 7 dwelling units an acre. Shelmore Village, it's 41 units on a little over 3.5 acres. So that's right at 11.15, so 12 units an acre. And this is in one of the hubs, so just to clarify. And what I'm trying to explain is that the comp plan has looked at the density through those hubs and redevelopment centers. And what the commission was tasked with and what they wanted to bring to you was, we're talking about the commercial corridor. So instead of doing the corridors, we wanted to get at those hubs and redevelopment centers and then look at what's going on along the corridor. So, and this is Oyster Park mixed use, that's 20 dwelling units an acre. So the commission asked me to look at what other communities are doing, and so I provided them a few examples. Hilton Head and their mixed-use business district, they do not define density. It is limited by their design standards, height, parking, those sorts of things. The city of Charleston is different depending on what neighborhood you're in. It could be anywhere from 5 units up to 9 units an acre. And then Wilmington has a base density of 8 units, and then, like you mentioned, they provide incentives. So if you do LID or affordable housing, then you're allowed more density above that base 8. So the commission looked at that, and they talked a lot about wanting workforce housing. And so what they wanted the committee, what they wanted brought forward from their discussion was that they'd like to keep the first two conditions. And then the third condition becomes, if you're providing workforce housing, your density stays. So that 12 units an acre that's in there now, that stays if you're providing workforce housing. If you're not providing workforce housing, they suggested that your density should not exceed 2 units an acre. And that is what came out of those discussions. And again, keep in mind, this isn't necessarily in the redevelopment centers or the hubs. And we went through an exercise because everybody likes Shelmore Village. It's 12 units an acre, and it's in one of those community scale hubs. So if you looked at 20% of the residential, it says 20% of the square footage in a hub should be residential. Right now, if you look at that hub that Shelmore Village is in, it's about 500,000 square feet. About 60,000 square feet of that is residential. So if you figure 20% of that is 100, that opens it up to where, okay, there's still 40,000 square foot capability to have residential in the hubs. And that was kind of the exercise they went through and we looked at. And so this is specific to commercial properties outside of those areas that run along the corridors. And this was their recommendation. This did not go for a public hearing. This was discussion only to bring to you and get further direction.
All right. Do we have any comments from the committee?
I like it.
Ms. Hyatt? And Ms. Corley, do you have more to say?
No. So we're going to send this, our recommendations back to them? Is that where it'll go from here?
It would need to go to, yeah, for public hearing.
For public hearing, right.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. I guess the point is, what she's saying, this is just the linear pieces that we'd like to keep commercial and less residential. I feel like we have a lot of opportunity for residential expanding in our redevelopment hubs, so it's not like we're eliminating those opportunities. We did have at our economic development meeting, we had Daryl Davis come. He's the director of Charleston County Housing and Neighborhood Revitalization, and it was a conversation we probably need to hear here, in that he said that housing in general is a shortage problem in all of Charleston County, that it's not just affordable housing that we need to be focusing on. He mentioned how even middle-income people are being pushed out because the wealthy are basically overpaying for that
that niche of housing. So not only are we losing affordable housing, we're losing middle-income housing. So this takes me to her examples show none of those places mentioned 12. Her example showed 8 units per acre. And the commission mentioned 12 if it's affordable and only 2 if it's regular. So to me, I'd like to see us do maybe 8 if it's affordable and 4 if it's just regular housing. So it's sort of a compromise, like bump it to 8 and then up it to 4, because we still don't want to lose that middle piece either. We want to have affordable, but we don't want to, you know, eliminate the middle piece either.
Is there a way to make it mixed? Because I think that there's also sometimes the community doesn't understand what affordable housing is or workforce housing is, that it's not subsidized, it's not Section 8 housing, it is for people who have income and are contributors to the community. So I think, is there a way to have it mixed where they, instead of all workforce housing, it'd be some mix of the two, so we keep both?
Or does that go to what you said, not being allowed to?
That's actually a great point, because most successful affordable housing projects are a mix. Some are market rate, some are, and so that's actually what staff would recommend, is if you're going to allow, if you're going to keep it at 12 units an acre, perhaps it's 50% of its workforce housing or something like that. And keep in mind, this is a condition. So we're not requiring somebody to come in with a development plan and do all affordable housing. This is a condition that somebody has to meet in order to develop in a commercial property. And so I think by providing this condition and saying 50% of it has to be workforce housing, if you choose to do that, I think it's separate from inclusionary zoning, and that's how staff would view it. But we do definitely agree that 50% is...
It would be couched as a bonus density, right? So
right.
You would get,
exactly.
So if all dwelling, so item 3 could be density shall not exceed 4 units per acre, if providing workforce housing, density shall not exceed 8 units per acre.
Right. Yep.
And
exactly.
That way they get twice as much.
They get twice as much, but then they only have to have 4, mm-hmm. 4 per acre of workforce, 4 per acre regular.
Yeah.
And that way we don't miss out on that segment of the market.
All right, I agree that's high. Okay.
I like it too.
Mr. Chapman?
Chairman, could you ask her to go back to some of the other communities?
Mm-hmm.
Because, and look at what we did in Shelmore. Shelmore's got 12, 11.3. And that's in Mount Pleasant. It's a beautiful development.
We've allowed it.
Yep. What's wrong with that? What's wrong with that?
We'll still be allowed. I mean, that's part of a hub, right?
Mm-hmm.
So those sorts of developments can still happen in our redevelopment hubs. We're only talking about just the linear pieces like Coleman and
where,
you know,
where does
just
it say that?
This is what we were talking about from the beginning, that we're not talking about our redevelopment hubs. We're just talking about our linear business areas, that we'll still be able to do the units that the comp plan calls for in our redevelopment hubs. This is only talking about our...
I didn't see anything that said that.
Isn't that what you explained?
Well, the comp plan sets the densities for all areas, including the redevelopment centers and the community scale hubs. This is strictly a provision that's been in the ordinance for 20 plus years that says if you're commercial and you want to do residential, you're only allowed to do up to 12 units an acre.
But this applies in hubs as well, though, right? If those hubs are zoned commercial, then if we were to change...
If the zoning's in place, yes.
If the zoning's in place, mm-hmm. So it would apply to hubs,
okay.
If the zoning's in place.
Yeah.
Well, my understanding was that they would probably be planned developments, and so then that would change that.
Probably. Redevelopment centers, you're supposed to do a planned development.
So
community scale hubs, it depends on the size.
To a PD, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. The PD would allow more units.
I still don't see any place where it says anything other than commercial. commercial properties. And so my concern is we are further sanitizing what's going into commercial activities, mm-hmm. which is not something that I want to be a part of.
What do you mean by sanitizing? You mean limiting?
Yes. And I like the idea of the 50% of a number. And if we do the 50%, if you keep the 12 and keep and use 50% for attainable housing, I could vote for it.
You don't want to drop to 8.
I do not.
I'd like to move that we do the 8 per acre, 4 per acre and 8 if it's affordable.
Okay. With the bonus of
yeah, the additional. With the bonus, 50%, the way you described.
And I think I see Ms. Hyatt's point of dropping to 8 in that we as a town, with our public services and with our school systems, are at capacity. It's not our level of government, but at the county level of government, there are multiple discussions going on about rezonings of schools because schools are overcrowded. And so I think, you know, we want to incentivize the creation of affordable housing, but I think we have to place some limits on it because I don't think that our community can accommodate a huge influx of individuals, especially individuals with families. And I think that's one thing that we've seen about Mount Pleasant is the nursery. We are the safe, wonderful community where people want to come and have their kids and raise their kids up here, which is wonderful. But I think we don't have the schools to accommodate it. And there is no space in Mount Pleasant to create more schools to accommodate it. I mean, the next high school is going to be built in Awandaw, and they're working on trying to figure out how to make that an attractive option to people in the north end of town, making it a magnet or something. So I can see where Ms. Hyatt is coming from, and I think dropping to 4 with a bonus, a double bonus for workforce is an acceptable approach to me. Ms. Corley?
I agree 100%. Yes. Sorry. Was that a motion, Ms. Hyatt? Do we know who seconded?
I think I did.
Yeah, you did.
Thank you. Okay. So we have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion on this point? This is a recommendation to council. Now, of course, this is just 4 of us, so council could pop it back up to 12 if they wanted to, or, you know, drop it further. So, Mr. Chapman?
I'm going to vote no.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Those against?
No.
All right, so the recommendation goes 3-1 to council.
And I'm looking at other cities. I just think we're out of line.
All right, moving on to item 7 on the agenda, workforce housing terms of affordability and possible incentives.
Real quick, just a point of clarification. So that has not received a public hearing, but the motion is to take it to council for approval next week, and then take it
to the commission, yes. Just to get a pulse on, there's no reason to do it for public hearing if this is not something the council's on board with.
Okay, great. Thank you. This next item was actually before you last month, and I was asked to bring it back with a few other additional items. And so if you'll recall, we talked about terms of affordability. Right now, our ordinance requires a minimum of 10 years. Historically, our workforce housing projects have been 10 years. With the exception of Gregory Ferry, which was 75 years. We did some research, and really kind of the standard was 30 years, the life of the mortgage. You all asked that I bring that back, and that's a very simple text amendment change. In fact, we already advertised it for public hearing, so it'll be on the September Planning Commission agenda, just changing that 10 to 30 years. And then you also asked to bring back different types of workforce housing incentives. And, you know, we've been talking about all day, it's kind of been the theme. We've had incentives in the past, bonus densities, things like that. But there's really 2 types of incentives. It's going to be regulatory and funding. Like I said, we've had the density bonuses. We're headed back to that with the provision that's going to council next week. We already offer reduced fees through our exemption grant that provides relief from the building permit impact fees. And then there's tax incentives through the low housing income tax credit, which projects have used in the past. And so that's really the gist of any sort of incentives that we have. And I know we are participating in the county's Housing Our Future plan and involved in that. And so, you know, we'll certainly, if other things come across, we'll certainly share that with you, and we're involved in those meetings. But this is really kind of what you have. The expedited review, we've got a pretty good process in place for review already. There are other things we could look at, probably similar to the environmental guidelines. You know, we could look at design standards, reduced parking requirements, flexibility, and things like that. So there are certainly some things that you know, we could look at further if so directed.
All right. Do we have any thoughts from the committee?
So we're moving at this time to just move it to 30. Is that what mm-hmm. we're voting on?
Do we need a vote at this point? No.
I don't think so. Okay. I think you just kind of wanted to see that as right. an update, and we're already moving it forward.
Right.
I think, you know, that's probably, you know, you look back at, we had density bonus in place, and it worked for 10 years. And then after the 10 years is up, we lost those units. And so I think just changing this to 30 years is going to make a big difference. And particularly as we look at bringing back other types of incentives. So. But yeah.
Right, so you don't need anything further from us on that?
Nope.
Moving on from item 7 to item 8, update on zoning code rewrite.
Yes, ma'am. So we have done subchapter A, subchapter B, and subchapter C. We are finishing up subchapter C. We have weekly standing meetings with our consultants. We're going back and forth on things such as you're going to be seeing a new neighborhood character preservation overlay. So where you have the SR2 overlay district, this new overlay is going to take over for that. We're going to be talking about the middle missing housing. And so, you know, duplexes, triplexes, and quadplexes, allowing them in the townhouse district, things like that. And so these are the things we've been going back and forth on. The principal use table, we, in addition to the principal use table, our new code will have an accessory use table along with a temporary use table. So we're refining all of those things to bring you to the timeline. So we've provided final comments back to the consultants. We plan to provide Planning Commission the week of October 10th with those three first subchapters. So you're talking about the principal use table, all of our residential use districts, all the overlays, all of that's going to be in there. We wanted to provide them about 2 weeks to review that, hold a special meeting the week, a special workshop the week of October 24th. From there, we'd like to present it to the Planning Committee at your November meeting or hold a special meeting. And then based on that, either we have another workshop or if we're ready, we hold a public hearing. But we don't want to hold a public hearing until we're ready because you have that 30-day requirement before council has to take action. So look to be seeing some the special workshop. We'll be putting the news and the agenda out for that the week of the 24th. And you'll be seeing that once the commission provides their input.
And I think I would like to hold a special meeting on this specifically, just because I want to be able to give it the attention that it deserves. This is something mm-hmm. very significant for our community. It's three entire subchapters. And I think trying to cram it in with the rest of the Planning Committee agenda would probably be a little bit much for one meeting. So I think, mm-hmm. and we could do it perhaps the day after committee day or something close around there, if that works for people.
Great.
Okay. All right, thank you so much for the update. Is there more?
Last but not least, our public input matters. So getting back to part of the comp plan implementation was not only to update the code, but also have these public input meetings that could drill down into our different districts. So we talked about that. We talked about the meetings coming up. We're going to have a series of public meetings with representation from every department. And we've got our slides put together. This is a very rough draft, but we're going to talk about livability, housing availability, transportation, and our capital improvements. We're going to talk about tree canopy and management. Public safety is going to be there. We're going to have fire, police, public services. And then we're going to talk about economic development and our business community. So our first meeting is September 15th, so it's next Thursday. It's going to be 5 to 7 right out here in the town hall open area. And we look forward to it. It's going to be a great way to get public input for the Johnny Dodds district, and I wanted to make you all aware of that meeting, and then we'll make sure and remind you of all the upcoming meetings after that, but they'll be held in various districts.
Great. Thank you so much. So
we'll have QR codes and online surveys for folks that can't come. Our communications office has been great. We've hired CDM Smith to help out, so we've got, it's going to be a great way to get public's input on different things. So
all right, thank you so much. And now we are on to item 10 on the agenda. If there's nothing further to come before this committee, we stand adjourned.